This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. It is 6 a.m. Monday the 30th of November and welcome to yet another week, guys. Are we excited to be starting what is going to be the 12th month of the year, I think, in just a couple of days?
Yes, oh my God. Time just flies by so quickly.
You know, that's a really funny concept, right? Because at the same time, I'm thinking this year has been really long, but at the same time is flying by so quickly. How can you live in two senses of time at the same time? It feels so weird.
Yeah, it is pretty weird. And I think it's just because for a lot of us, it's been quite... There's not been a lot of variety in terms of the activities that we've done. So, you know, it feels like every day is the same. It's kind of the same thing. So that stretches. But at the same time, you look back and you're like, yeah, no, I haven't done much.
Exactly. So. It feels like it's slow. But when you look back and you realize how much you've done in the last year, everyone should just take their hand and give themselves a pat on the back. Mm-hmm. Because it has been quite a year. And even if you've gotten some productivity done, I think that's quite an achievement. And I think back to pre-pandemic, right? It feels like years ago. It feels, February feels like it was last year.
Yes, it almost feels like it's in another universe, in another time, right? So I feel like I've done a lot, but I was wondering, why do I feel like I've not progressed a lot? And I think it's because I've been stuck in Malaysia, right? I haven't, you know, none of us have been able to get out unless you have some exceptional reason. So it feels like I'm just like here, right? I'm just going to work and then I'm going home and that's it.
Yeah, it's been, I think, mostly status quo for a lot of people. I've heard people describe, 2020 was a write-off. But hey, you know, we've learned a lot about ourselves, certainly, and the people around us, I'm sure, in this year of mostly having to stay in one place. And we're going to be revisiting this conversation, I'm sure, in just slightly more than a month's time when 2020 officially comes to an end. So we'll save the rest of the kind of remembrances for then. In the meantime, we do have a lot of things lined up for you this morning. Noel, what are we looking at later on at about 6:30?
Well, a number of news here. Something about Iran for a change, Ethiopia as well as maybe South Korea if you have time.
All right. And Roshan later on at about 6:15.
Not as exciting as Noel's lineup over there. We're just going to be talking about Pale, the free speech Twitter wannabe. And it's got some interesting backers, actually. I was looking at this a few weeks ago after Bill Gates said that he was a bit worried of what was being conversed on Pale, the so-called free speech alternative to Twitter. So we're going to be talking about it in just a little bit.
All right. And of course, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can WhatsApp us 01878 9899 or tweet us. We don't have a Pale. Tweet us at BFM Radio. But up next, we are going to be looking at actually talking to people on the phone and whether or not you've been using your phone to call people more recently. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Another Day in Paradise by the estimable Phil Collins. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, I don't know about you, but in this, you know, time of COVID-19, I have found myself actually talking to people perhaps a little bit more, or actually than I would have without a pandemic to spur me on, right? Because you can't physically go and see a lot of the people whom you would ordinarily just invite out to lunch. So instead, you pick up the phone. And I'm one of those people that up until I think this year, I was almost allergic to the idea of actually dialing someone's number into a telephone. Because, you know, it just felt a little bit too immediate. Like, you know, why call someone when you can text them and then they can take their time to respond? A phone call coming into my phone felt like an emergency. So, you know, I was wary of imparting the same feeling onto others.
I have to say I seldom make calls unless it's an emergency, right?
Like there we go.
Like somebody, stole your credit card or something.
If Noel calls me, I know it's an emergency.
Yeah, it definitely is an emergency. Like maybe get to work, like, are you okay? But I do make one phone call at least once a week for the longest time, and that's to my mom. So we do communicate on the phone. And I do wonder, actually, you know, I do hesitate picking up the phone and calling someone. And I think it's something to do with the fact I do feel nervous, like maybe I've lost the art of communication, right? Like talking to people on the phone, and what if there's an awkward silence? What do I say?
Oh, just say nothing. You know, that's just let the awkward silence be. It's the beautiful part of the conversation. Sometimes you just both don't have anything to say. But because you're on the phone, there is a bit of like, there is a connection there, right? You're in silence, but not alone, which is quite interesting. I think it's, I personally think we don't pick up the phone and call because the protocols and the practices have changed, right? Because texting allows, you're giving, the power now belongs to the other side as opposed to you calling. If I get a phone call at a random time and I know it's not, let's say a top three priority, I'm not going to pick up that call. Because today, normally what happens, especially for me, is I will text someone and say, hey, can you chat in like 5 minutes? Because a lot of times we are doing other things. Work is no longer confined to 9 to 5. It's 9 to 9 a lot of times, right? So the practices have changed. So maybe that's part of it. And I do enjoy a phone call, right? I do. But if someone calls me, it feels like sometimes it's intruding onto my time. It's breaking into my concentration. It's maybe I'm doing something else. I'm in a meeting. As opposed to if someone texts me and says, hey, can you speak in 10 minutes? I'm like, no, but I can speak at 2. You know, it changes because the schedules, we all live in such, we all have different schedules. And now especially so, right? Just talking about these phone calls, my siblings and I have finally decided that every Sunday at 6 p.m. Malaysian time, we're going to be chatting with each other. And that's because we live in very different time zones. One's in Australia, one's in Switzerland. So do the math. It's not an easy fix. So progress is being made. But I think having the practices as opposed to the spontaneity can be a good way of going about it. Like, Noelle, you have a regular call with your mom. So she's expecting that.
Yeah, so I actually just kind of made the step to even just taking that step to contact someone and say, hey, you know, do you want to catch up over the phone sometime, you know, this week if you're free? Prior to this whole, you know, situation, I didn't do that very often. And I actually only just did that yesterday with a friend whom I haven't seen in nearly a year because he was only back in Malaysia for a short time at the start of the year. Now he's back in Australia and obviously borders are shut. You know, and he's just gotten engaged. So when I saw this on Facebook, I was like, that's amazing. And then I actually went and messaged him and said, hey, you know, let's have a chat sometime this evening because let's catch up. Because obviously you're not going to be back in Malaysia anytime soon. I'm not going to be able to see you in person. So, you know, the phone call is the next best thing. And so we're kind of setting up a time to actually catch up in a way that we haven't actually, you know, prior to COVID, I don't think, and the odd visit back to Malaysia, I don't think I ever spoke to him on the phone. So these are the kind of behavioral changes, I guess, that are spurred on by this pandemic. But I wonder, you know, whether we are reclaiming that art of conversation. How does that weigh against, you know, would you choose a voice call over a video call, for example, Noelle?
So I think it depends on the intention. So with my sister, it would be probably a Zoom call because she gets to see me, I get to see her, we read body language. I think all that's still important to make sure that each of us are well. So the phone call is because my mom's just easier to do a phone call, right? But otherwise, I think we'll probably engage in a Zoom call. And for clients, maybe say about 1 or 2 years prior to COVID, it was very normal to just pick up the phone or actually see the person in person. Then I think last year already, clients were starting to say, okay, let's just catch a Zoom call. Let's do a Zoom call or get onto there are various apps out there. So, but this year for sure is a Zoom call. It's no longer phone calls. And, you know, just being able to see each other, being able to show slides.
Yeah, and I think the distinction between whether you want to do video and audio really depends on how comfortable you are with the other side and infrastructure-wise, what's the most practical of methods, right? I'm particularly not a big fan of using video on phone. I prefer using a webcam. I prefer using my desktop for that and sitting at a table because maybe I'm just lazy. I just don't like holding my phone up for a prolonged amount of time. Also, there is the Pavlovian habit of if I hold up my phone, I want to be doing other things aside video chatting.
That's true.
Right? So I find myself closing the pane and just listening to other people while I'm browsing other things, which I hate. I honestly do hate that because when I am talking to someone, I want to be talking to that other person. I don't want to be doing other things.
That's interesting because that's one of the reasons why I prefer to do it on the phone because it physically limits me. I cannot be using my phone to play a game or to browse on the internet. I have to be paying attention to that person. So, you know, it kind of narrows your focus a little bit and prevents my mind from wandering because, you know, I'm one of those terrible people that serial multitasker.
Hold on. Really. You can just, if it's on the phone, you can just put it on speaker and then minimize it and then play your game.
That's why I don't put it on speaker. I actually hold it to my ear.
Oh, right. Okay. So these are just rules that you've confined yourself to.
Correct. correct, yes. So nevertheless, let us know what you think about this. Have you been spending more time on the phone actually calling people during these unusual times? You can WhatsApp us 01878988899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are going to be looking at a new social media platform called Parlay in just a couple of minutes. But first, some messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Golden Hour by Casey Musgraves. And it's not quite the Golden Hour yet, still dark outside. But in the meantime, as you're waiting for it, tune in to us. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. And we are looking this morning at a new social media platform that has emerged and become and gained popularity in the last 2 years or so. It's a two-year-old app called Parlay. And I think it gained a lot of traction during and in the wake of the US elections, because this platform markets itself as kind of like a Facebook or a Twitter, but notably without the same kind of moderation standards. So it attracts a lot of people who are perhaps suspicious of the moderation controls imposed by big tech companies like Facebook and Twitter. And I think they've attracted some interesting backers, I believe. Isn't that right, Roshan?
Yes, they do have some conservative backers. I think one of them was a massive Republican Party donor, but the name escapes me at this point in time. What's very interesting, though, is that you're seeing more conservative influencers, conservative politicians starting to talk about this, move over to the platform, because they're not being censored. That's what they claim, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's quite clear that Twitter and Facebook have moderation standards because, you know, there's been pressure on them to step up their game when it comes to the kind of nonsense that you see online. The chief spewer of nonsense is President Donald Trump, who will be former president soon. And they're all going here because, again, it's this allure of being able to say whatever you want. And this, again, this has the makings of a, if no one else joins, the makings of a right-wing bubble, right? Which is also very dangerous because bubbles reinforce each other. And then whether it's a left-wing or right-wing bubble, they reinforce each other and then they go in divergent directions. And any hope of coming back to the center becomes smaller and smaller. So my idea here is, and I hope there are Americans out there listening to this, left-wingers should go and join Parlay. Mm-hmm. Join in. And because it's no censorship, right? Just go join the conversation. Huh?
Yeah, so I'm looking at a website now, parlay.com, and it calls itself the world's town square. So speak freely and express yourself openly without fear of being deplatformed for your views. My question is, I wonder how long this can continue, though. A matter of time, the authorities might zoom into it and ask all sorts of questions, especially if it may lead to some form of violence or some form of disengagement. It goes on to say, engage with real people, not bots. And I wonder, though, is that really possible? I think it's a matter of time, too, that the bots will come.
It's a matter of scale, yeah, eventually.
Also, they actually have a verification process as opposed to Facebook and Twitter, right? There is no actual verification process. Mm.
And it's not a total free-for-all, right? So one of the features of this, of Parlay, because I'm also looking at the website, is they say moderate your own world, which is perhaps a fancy way of saying create your own social bubble. But it does offer you functions like shadow banning, which Twitter also allows you to do, and it filters. You can filter out sensitive material, certain words that you don't particularly want to see on your timeline, things like that. But the onus is on you. It's not imposed by the company, an overarching company, which is, I think, the attraction that I can see. Because if putting myself in the shoes of someone who actually from the media they consume and from their own social circles believes that the US election was rigged, it would be very difficult to discuss that on any of the existing social media platforms. I think even in the spirit of curiosity and actual concern, without the fear of being deplatformed. I can see why the attraction of Parlay would come to be as a result of that.
But it also seems like a lot of smoke. Really, it feels like all this deplatforming. All Twitter is doing is saying that, hey, you might not be adhering to the rules here. Mm-hmm. This is not a verified claim. And someone needs to be fact-checking people out there. I mean, when you're being led by the president who's making all sorts of absurd claims. In this Parlay universe here, what's going to stop people from just talking rubbish, right? And that's, yes, I understand
I guess it's the same for any social media platforms.
But there is pressure on Twitter and Facebook. Now, there won't be pressure on Parler because Parler is putting itself out there as this anti-establishment construct, right? So,
I mean, eventually the controls are probably going to come in if they start running into issues of hate speech and libel and things like
that. But that's a case they're going to be willing to fight. Mm. They can go take it to the courts, and they're not going to back down. Facebook and Twitter back down because, one, they're public listed, and two, they're left-leaning, they're Silicon Valley. So there is a different connotation to it. I don't think Parler will back down at all.
Well, it's very difficult to say, if they want to operate in a certain environment, they may need to comply with certain rules. But just a quick word on this. I think Facebook has tightened their entry requirements. Like if you need to register, I think now they ask for, actually some documents, some proof that you actually exist. but I just want to say that, whether you join a new social media network really depends where your friends are, right? You want to go where your friends are, or where are the people that you are following religiously. You want to follow where they go. So if they're all going to Parler, then I guess a matter of time I'll be there. But I have to say that I think for now, I'm probably quite happy in the Facebook world and Instagram.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting kind of social media, I think, rebalancing perhaps if Parler does gain traction.
Partisanship. Wouldn't call it balancing. I think this is becoming a highly partisan situation.
That's an interesting point because it would be the partisanship of essentially real world politics moving onto the social media sphere, right? And you could argue that it was already there to begin with, but now it is becoming a matter of different platforms for different views.
You've got the Fox News for social media. We've got the CNN for social media all happening under our noses right now.
And Trump may start his own media company.
Who knows? Maybe he's partly backing this one. We don't know. Anything could be happening.
Anything at all could happen at this point.
Oh, but Trump media company, man, what a world that would be.
Well, let us know what you think about this as well. Would you participate in a social media platform that is free of moderation? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin now, but first, Don't You Want Me by Human League, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Calm Like You by The Last Shadow Puppets. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. Now we're taking a look at stories around the world this morning since it's after the 6:30 news. And first on our list is what's happening in Iran. So in a bit of a break from the COVID-19 news that is everywhere very recently, it appears that Iran has taken the step to blame Israel for the killing of a top nuclear scientist on Friday and said that the death of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh would not slow down the country's nuclear program.
Yes, so I think the bigger this is obviously going to create some tension around the whole nuclear program situation because Iran is not backing down, right? They're saying that they will continue going forward even though they've lost their essentially their top scientists when it comes to nuclear development programs to this act here. And they have said that President Rouhani has said that they will respond in due course, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. This is going to be something to watch. Also, this is coming off the heels of the U.S. presidential election, the end of the Trump term, heading towards a Biden era. And if you remember correct, if we look back, it was the Obama administration that put in the Iran nuclear deal. I wonder if this really puts the nail in the coffin for any kind of resurgence of that deal under the Biden administration.
Yeah, so I think, somebody did assassinate him. So I think his assassination could be an intention or the intention to slow down Iran's nuclear ambitions. But of course, Iran's not going to put up a weak show, right? They're going to say, no, it's not. And yeah, so I think the question, Joe Biden wants to revive the 2015 Iranian nuclear deal. Would this then slow down the deal? Would this slow down negotiations? Possibly so. And in any case, I think Joe Biden's priority is really COVID-19 and the economic situation in the U.S.,
Yes. So what happened was that, it isn't entirely clear what happened to Fakhrizadeh. So it apparently on Friday, he was seriously wounded after attackers targeted his car and exchanged fire with his bodyguards. He later died from his injuries in hospital. And this is a man who is said to have led Project Ahmad as well, the alleged covert program established in 1989 to research the potential for building a nuclear bomb. I believe the New York Times as well compared him with Robert J. Oppenheimer, who directed the Manhattan Project. So this is certainly going to be a serious blow to Iran's nuclear ambitions. And whether or not this precipitates a wider conflict with Israel is also going to be now in question. Israel has, of course, denied any knowledge of the incident.
Yes, and actually, Fakhrizadeh's name, in addition to all of that, was specifically mentioned by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in a presentation about Iran's nuclear program. This was back in April 2018. So they were aware of his, let's just say,
his
influence in the program.
And also now moving over to what's been happening in Ethiopia. So the CNBC has an article about this morning from Ethiopia saying Ethiopia says its military now controls the capital of Tigray, which has been a province that has been giving them significant trouble. And I think over the past couple of days, there has been, I think the Ethiopian military has started shelling one of its major cities of Mekelle, which prompted a lot of humanitarian outcry because Mekelle is a very densely populated city. It's got a population of over 300,000 people. So there have been worries over civilian casualties, to which the Ethiopian military and the government responded that if they didn't move away from the liberation, I think it's the Tigray Liberation Front leaders in time, there would be no mercy.
Yeah, so, you know, the country appears to be on the brink of a civil war. So there's a piece here by CNBC. They estimate something like 43,000 refugees have fled for Sudan, where people are struggling to get food, shelter, and also care. The Red Cross says hospitals in Tigray are running out of drugs, and fighting near camps are sheltering something like 96,000 refugees in northern Ethiopia. Has put them all in the line of fire. So, like you mentioned, the UN United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, they are asking for access to people so that they can provide aid as well as food.
Yeah, I mean, this stems to the fact that both these governments, the Tigray government and the Ethiopian government, don't recognize each other as legitimate, right? That's what this comes down to. And when that happens, it comes down to force. In an era where if no external support is going to come to your aid, and if no one else can do anything about that, the party with the biggest stick is going to win. And that seems like what's happening here. I think the Ethiopian army has said that no innocents have been hurt so far, but with communications cut off to the region of 6 million people, not just the city, but the region of 6 million people, no one can really verify any of the claims between both warring factions.
Yeah, and the wider implications of this, of course, is that it does threaten to destabilize not just Ethiopia, but its surrounding regions. And of course, you know, South Sudan has also only just come out of civil war. Ethiopia sits right on the Horn of Africa, which is the site of one of the busiest shipping routes in the world. So it's going to be an area to closely watch, certainly, if this unrest continues to balloon. But right now, we're about to head into some messages, and then up next we're going to be looking at the latest developments out of our own local papers and portals, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9, that was The Beatles with Yellow Submarine, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. And by that rustling of papers you hear, we are looking at our local newspapers this morning, as well as what's been happening on the portals. Noel, you have the New Straits Times in front of you. What's happening there?
A total of 1,300 new COVID-19 cases were logged yesterday, with Kuala Lumpur registering the highest figure, overtaking Selangor and Sabah, which has been recording the bulk of cases. And really what we know about KL, 493 cases, with something like 473 cases connected to workplace clusters, namely the construction sites.
Yeah, I think this is something that we're going to be watching very closely as well, because considering the fact that the CMCO is supposed to come to an end next month, so one wonders whether that's actually going to come to pass or whether it'll be extended again with the number of cases.
Probably in very selected regions
that we're seeing here. I've got the Star in front of me, and their headline here is, COVID-19 don't fall for fake cures. So amidst all of the talk that we've seen about vaccines from the different major drug companies in the US, as well as, of course, talks about COVAX and, you know, China-Russia vaccines, it appears that social media has started to see scams and snake oil cures and remedies being touted as a cure or a preventive measure for the coronavirus. So the important thing here is don't believe them. I mean, take all necessary steps needed, you know, to follow the basic SOPs, wash your hands with soap and water, physical distance, and eventually, and that's effectively going to be the best cure or preventive measure that we have right now for this virus.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at the paper, the portals more specifically, and I'm paying attention to more of the political side of things. So quite a bit of news coming out of the a few political parties here. Let's start off with Bersatu. The AGM has approved a new non-Bumi associate a new wing for non-Bumi associate members, and this was unanimously approved the proposal to set up the wing, and this was at its third AGM, right? So I think this comes off the back that there's been some talk about bringing more non-Bumis into the Bersatu fold. And one of those members is in August. You had former PKR lawmaker Edmund Santarakumar Ramanaidu. He became the first non-Bumi Putra MP to join Bersatu. So this becomes this is an interesting point. I think even Azmin Ali has been talking about this. But even before that, Bersatu did have, even before all this change, they did have a... they did want to do this, but they didn't really execute upon it. But some other interesting points is there seems to be a lot of back and forth now between Barisan Nasional and PN. I mean, this is not anything new, but they seem to have reached, according to the Malaysian Insight here, an agreement to not contest in the same seats during the next general elections. And this is, they're quoting Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri Yaakob. Basically, they don't want 3-cornered fights. They don't want to cannibalize votes. So, and if they present a united front, they have a better chance of, I think, winning the seats and winning the election. And I think Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has also recently said that once COVID-19 has been dealt with, we will be heading towards a next general election.
Bersatu, as I know, they do allow non-Malays to join, and that's why Edmund Santara joined. So I think creating that wing is to send out that message more clearly, and I think that was in line with Muhyiddin's move to make the party more open. But what I wonder though, whether non-Malay members, associate members, do they have voting rights? Can they run for the top office within the party? So I wonder, so is this just lip service or is this really quite a substantial move? But, just talking about more community type news, this Kelantan student, Nolida Khalida, she has to climb up a 20 meter high hill on her and to bring her laptop and a Wi-Fi modem. To sit for her exams, and she's a medical laboratory technology student at University of Malaya Medical Center. She says she cannot get internet at home, so she needs to climb all the way up to the hill and taking her exams, where there are a lot of mosquitoes there. And so, but I guess, that's where people who are resilient, this is what they have to do, right? Do whatever it takes to sit for their exams online.
Yeah, and of course, we can't forget that it's also flooding season in our northern states. So the main picture on the front page of The Star this morning is a woman who who's faced with the task of washing what looks to be about 3 dozen muddy plates, because this is as a result of the fact that her house was completely flooded, and all of her belongings were just completely covered in mud. And this lady, her house is in Ayaputeh Kemaman in Terengganu. I think 150 houses in her neighbourhood were affected. So, we are no stranger to water disruptions and to flash floods here in Kuala Lumpur. And it causes a lot of outrage because, Central Business District. But this is also something that Kelantan and Terengganu and our northern states are dealing with almost every year. And they are also desperately in need of some kind of resolution. But we're going to be bringing you more business news and analysis in a couple of minutes, but that comes right after the 7 o'clock news bulletin brought to you by Lee Shin Ying. But first, here is Imitation of Life by REM. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.